Now, you may wonder, where in the world are we? Reality check. You had to come today. Well, not really, but I'm glad you're here. We're on the book of Judges, and we kind of took a rabbit trail, which is extremely important to explore. Before we get to any of the judges, of whom Othniel is the first one, we see that God is looking for leaders who are available for his purposes. Sometimes those leaders have a place of real importance, and sometimes those leaders are just the way you and I represent Christ in our daily life. We can be a leader in our homes, as we lead our families and our children. We can be a real person of influence at our place of employment, because some of you work in a place where you are the only Christian that represents the Lord. It may not be easy. You may almost have to make some opportunities. Just wait for them, and the Lord will give you opportunities that you wouldn't even dream of. But as we were looking at the leaders God called, we see that there are a lot of them who were really effective despite having some real problems. Many of them would rather do something else. They told the Lord as much, and sometimes the reluctant leader is the most effective leader, because he is keenly aware that he does not have the resources and he has to depend on God to get him through. So when God called these leaders, he was looking for certain things. There were three things we covered before. He wanted one person, a person, to be God's spokesman. He wanted him to be his intercessor. And he wanted him to be his servant. Sometimes we minimize some of those without realizing how really important they are, that God works through people, he works through prayers as he accomplishes his purposes. When you go to the Old Testament, you'll find that sometimes God anoints a leader, a Christian, to be a spokesman. Sometimes God appoints a leader. As a matter of fact, it may be a pagan, like Pharaoh, to accomplish God's purposes, but ultimately, God is in control. Then the last time we got into, if God has a great purpose in mind and a heart for people, and he sees the harvest out there, he has a means by which he reaches people, and that's you and me. So if people are not being reached, it usually will come down to whether or not you and I as believers are available to lead them into the light of the Lord. When we did that, we simply said, God is looking for certain things. He's looking for a soldier who will obey orders. He's looking for an athlete who will play by the rules. He's looking for a farmer who keeps sowing the seed. That's God's expectation. That's what's going to take to get the work done. But what are we looking for? And then we took some time to talk about comfort zones. What is it that we Christians are involved in that sometimes will make us unavailable to do the Lord's bidding? Unfortunately, in this personal peace and affluent society, we as believers have assumed that our American way of life is part of our definition of Christianity. And therefore, our own comfort is something that doesn't, you know, we don't want to give it up. We don't want somebody to disturb it. But let me assure you that in today's culture, you and I as believers cannot be unruffled by what we see. Lot's righteous soul was vexed day to day with the ungodly deeds of the people in Sodom. We finished up last time with the unbeliever. When you talk to people, you sometimes will walk away and say, and again, I think I mentioned, I'm not being judgmental, sometimes you have the impression, boy, is this person ever dense? Or why can't they see the very basics about Christianity? But it's almost like they're blind, and they are. Well, keep in mind that Paul says in the New Testament that spiritual deception or darkness is the characteristic of those who don't yet know the Lord. And as they are fed all of the different philosophies of the world, they will pick up prejudices. They will pick up opinions. They will pick up beliefs that are so deep-seated that is their comfort zone, and they don't want you and me to interfere with their comfort zone. So guess what? If we try to say to them, there is an accountability before the living God, they don't want to hear it, so they're going to heap ridicule on us. So we were talking about different kinds of strongholds, life-dominating habits and those things that are characteristic of many, many unsaved people, and it's gotten a grip on them. It's just a way of thinking. So they don't see clearly when you and I explain the simple facts of the gospel. And on the other hand, even if they understand it, they will simply tell you, it's just going to cost me too much. I've got something I want to do, and I don't want God to interfere with it. They may not tell you that in those clear terms. But you can go back and find some of them who will. Huxley and some of the others who simply say, we believe some of these atheistic things because we did not want a God to interfere with our mores. Some of them are honest. Some of them are not. When Christ was on trial, he said his purpose was to come to testify of the truth. We don't know what the body language was. When Pilate, what did he do? Did he snarl at him and say, what's truth? Or did he simply, in resignation, say, what's truth? People have been debating about this for years. Boy, in the Roman culture, that was a big thing. We don't know whether Pilate even expected an answer. He probably did not. So when the Lord said to him, I came to testify of the truth, when Pilate just flippantly maybe said, well, what's truth? As if it's not attainable. And then he went ahead and did what was politically correct anyway, just to make sure he didn't bring some more heat down on him from the Caesars in Rome. Now, you recognize this probably. I adapted this from a graphic that Ken Ham uses a lot, Answers in Genesis. I changed a fair amount of it. But there's a real battle going on between humanism and Christianity. And I put up here, what is the focus of the war? Well, originally he showed this, that the people in the Christian Tower are just hitting at a bunch of the issues, and they're not realizing that the real enemy is down here. I have a graphic I used in apologetics when I taught that in college, the making of the modern mind. And I put about 12 or 15 things over here that has fed into modern day thinking. Biblically, we as Christians know that the way to effectively train is what? Precept upon precept, line upon line. But now that's effective because it's the way the human mind operates. Did you realize that it's just as effective if you're teaching people error and lies? And the whole culture, especially the media, buys into that. And finally, after a while, you think, I must be the only one. Well, no, that's just a deception. But this is built upon the lies primarily of atheism. And if you don't accept God, you don't accept the fact that God has standards, then you will buy into anything. All kinds of politically correct distortions. So as we, and this one fella, the foundation I put here covers it up, but this fella here is shooting down there at his own foundation. Sometimes we Christians have shot ourselves in the foot. This fella here is aiming right for this other Christian. We've gotten distracted, haven't we? But the real way to do this is to understand that the battle starts down here in the way people have been trained and educated. Realistically, it's where we're going to have to start with people that we deal with. We do that with compassion. When the Lord looked at the people that to whom he ministered, he had great compassion because he had sheep. They were like sheep not having a shepherd. So you and I could get all hot and bothered about the dumb things that people do and how they just don't even get it. But that's never going to win them. The way that we live and what we say is the way to plant seed in their hearts and life. And they may not like it initially, but after you've lived consistently before them, a neighbor, a family member, a co-worker, you will eventually get the respect. Enough that when they run through a crisis, you may be the one they look up, and they're now willing to listen. For 35 centuries, after God gave the law at Sinai, God's truth was represented in the world by the Jews who were to be a light to the Gentiles. Truth was assumed to be absolute because it's based upon God who had spoken. When Christ came 20 centuries ago, then he gave the additional truth that God wanted people to have. So now, over the course, whether it's 20 centuries from Christ or 35 centuries going back to the beginning of our Judeo-Christian ethic, most people walk carefully when they said nasty things about the Ten Commandments and God's absolutes. But notice what has happened here since the 60s. You're talking about brazenness, where people shake their fist in God's face and say, God, number one, you're no longer relevant. Number two, you don't have any control over my life, and I'll discover whatever truth I want to live by all by myself. Well, they start out with truth is relative, based on Hegel's dialectic. Your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth. And if it works for you, then it's something that is your truth. Well, it started out that way. Each person can choose his own truth for himself. And then it graduated to the next, in which they said, you can't really know what truth is after all. And there was a period of several decades where that reigned supreme. And now, recently, we've gone into a third phase where the world says the truth is no longer relevant. It's no longer binding upon us. Now, I don't want to get too far astray in a bunch of things, but, oh, I know. Yeah, let me go back to this. I don't know if you kept up with this or not. Stephen Colbert did one of these stupid skits in 2006 or 7, used this word truthiness. And then a couple weeks ago, for 2016, Oxford Dictionary chose post-truth as the word of the year. Now, most of the time when I see that, I yawn and go to the next thing of news on my website. But because of the kind of ministry we're in, I thought, okay, this is important. So I looked up some information on it. Now, the reason this is important is because this is where you and I are living in this world. What does this mean? Well, truthiness is a word that they developed, which simply said, well, it's something that seems to be true to me, so I'm going to accept it as truth. Living by impressions, choosing what is true by your impressions or your preferences. So it's used by a person who knows intuitively from the gut that this has to be true. Well, I'm glad my doctor doesn't prescribe according to what his preferences or my preferences are. I want him to accurately assess what the situation is and give me something that's going to deal with my situation. So, as I looked at this, yes, let's get this thing going right. I put new batteries in it, but that doesn't mean a whole lot, does it? I think we have a receiver that's going. But anyway, what they did is they simply said during this last election, the word post-truth was used 2,000% more of the time. Now, that's a lot. So they said, this is worthy of our using this as the word of the year, post-truth. Well, as you look at that, you can see here, yeah, it was used a lot. And if you're like I hate dictionary definitions. I love to read them. I don't like to hear them quoted. I like to check etymologies of words. But notice, the bottom line of this is the idea that objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion. So you use slogans. You use sympathetic ideas. You use buzzwords that will make people cringe. But the word post-truth means we're living in an age in which the truth is no longer relevant. In the last 2 months, there were a lot of them who couldn't deal with reality. Take this last election, for instance. Now, I'm not going to be political in who won what and why they won and all that stuff, but the fact of the matter is everybody has a different response to any election. Well, in this one, on some of the college campuses, these students almost went to tears because they couldn't deal with that. So some of the Ivy League universities shut down exams until the kids could recover. In fact, some of them used Play-Doh and coloring books and petting animals for therapy. Now, it says that the tragedy is that these are people who are in training to be our nation's leaders. And reality is too much for them because they want things to go their way. We've coddled people so much that if things don't go their way, their life falls apart. But notice, truth does exist, regardless of whether we accept it or not. Most people are in denial when the doctor says you have terminal cancer. We hope he's wrong, but he's a professional. So the likelihood is it's probably accurate. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to deal with it. Look at a whole culture that's dealing with escapism. Could be the media, could be sports, it could be partying or living it up. But the idea is get away from it because life is just too tough to deal with. Take the easy way out. Well, in fact, that was on here about one thing, but you're right about one thing. The government certainly shouldn't be giving them Pell Grants or whatever. But should say this university is not teaching that which is right. But that's exactly right, Richard. One of the things that surprised me, this is not even more than 4 weeks old. Stanford University did a test, and I've forgotten how many hundreds of kids they had on this, but they said they could not tell the difference between what was true and what was not true. What they did is they gave them information from websites, and they would even put information on there, we call it fake news, which had the logo of like Fox News and things like that. But they said it was, in fact, they used the word dismaying. Here's secular people who says dismaying that the kids could not tell what was true and what wasn't. They had no basis for determining whether something they saw on, could be a website, it could be on Twitter, but they would buy into most anything. And they said it was appalling. 80% of the answers wrong. Just horrible. When fake news is repeated, it becomes difficult for the public to discern what's real. Who made this quote? If you tell a lie long enough, loud enough, often enough, the people will believe it. Anybody want to make a guess? Smart Alec. Right on target, Travis. Now, Lenin said something like it first. Goebbels repeated it later. But the fellow who made that quote was Adolf Hitler. Because he knew that what he was proposing so was so outlandish, but he didn't mind because his view was you say it often enough and people will eventually buy into it and the rest is history. It's just nuts what people will believe. So here's this thing about fake news. And I think they ought to have some kind of penalties. Because it's libel in print, it's slander if it's spoken, and when they indiscriminately put things out there as true that are not true, I think they ought to be made to pay a fine. That's not censorship, that's accountability. And we do that all the time, and it's all throughout. But they have a term called astroturfing. Now, astroturf is a fake turf, obviously they put them football fields. It just occurred to me. Probably shouldn't take 2 minutes to tell you. But there was a movie out years ago called Quarterback Princess. Helen Hunt starred in it, a young actress at the time, capable actress. And she, as a girl, wanted to play on the boys' team. Now, this is back probably from the 80s, maybe. So anyway, eventually they forced the coach to put her on the team. But she was such a good quarterback, because she could throw well, that she became the quarterback. And the fellas saw she was winning. So the team people accepted her, but boy, the cheerleaders, just, they were on her case all the time. So whoever the main lead fellow, can't remember the fellow's name, she's sitting there dejectedly on the bench. He wants to encourage her. He walks over and sits down on the bench. She barely even looks up. And he said, "Do you know why the administration decided not to tear up the grass and put in AstroTurf?" And she said, "No." He said, "So the cheerleaders would have a place to graze." I hope that's not the most edifying thing you hear today. But anyway, if you give people an impression that you and you alone, like Elijah did, I call it the Elijah complex, I'm the only one standing for the Lord. And the Lord said, "Quit your sniveling. I got a couple thousand prophets hidden away in the caves, and you're not the only one." But if people can convince us that majority rules, in a pluralistic society, we've lost our voice because we've been outvoted, well, we're going to just simply draw up our little clothes and slink off into a corner someplace. But we're speaking for the living God, who has more authority. You and I have the authority. He sent Ezekiel amongst the people who were going to reject. And the Lord said, "Yep, they're going to reject it, all right. But they will know that there was a prophet amongst them." Ezekiel got his reward, and they got their judgment. It's not for you and me to say, "I have to be successful." Because sometimes we don't know whether we're successful until they preach our funeral and somebody stands up and says, "You know, I just want to mention, I'm standing here as a believer today because this fellow, this lady up front, had such an influence in my life that they led me to the Lord." You know, that's where the battle is, isn't it? But it's a battle for the truth. And in this target overload situation that we have, they will simply convince us that we're in the minority. Now, I'm just going to take a minute or two to do this. I've forgotten the fellow who mentioned this. He's with the Koinonia Group in New Zealand. But he's been observing things in the United States. But you and I will will buy into this. This is nothing new. Most of you don't remember, because there are a lot of people here who weren't even born in 1989, but I remember this very well, where they were showing this fellow here called the Tank Man standing out, making these tanks come to a screeching halt during the uprising at Tiananmen Square. Iris Maurer, one of her friends, was over there at that time. We were wondering if we would get news at some point that the attacks on believers and others would have resulted perhaps in her death, but nothing came with that. But anyway, this made the news all over. Problem is, it didn't happen that way. Up here, I don't know whether this was set up or not. He's standing there. The tanks are to stop. Look at all this here. That's the actual picture. But they went back and put in crowds on this side. They brought in two lanes here. They put a crowd there to magnify how big the uprising was in Tiananmen Square. Total distortion. Lincoln's one of my favorites. So I saw this picture years ago, and I thought, man, with what, Marburg's disease, he became more and more emaciated with the care of the war. So they didn't have a good picture of Lincoln during the war. When I first saw this picture, I thought, on his best day, Lincoln never weighed more than 160 pounds at 6'2". So I thought, did they pad his coat? Maybe that's what they got. No, they just took a picture of John Calhoun
from Carolina, and they put Lincoln's head on Calhoun's pose. That is not an accurate picture. The Prime Minister of Canada didn't like his thunder being stolen. So when they published the picture in the paper, they just airbrushed old King George VI out of it. Is that an accurate picture? Well, the Queen and the Prime Minister were talking, but that is not an accurate picture. Not too much on this one, except look at the menacing. The gun there, almost aimed at this fellow, it didn't happen that way. He just had the gun there. I don't know whether he was trying to make some comments to the people. So they took this menacing pose, and they took this fellow here and blended them into one picture. You won't remember this, and I was too young to remember this, but I do remember Miller Tidings as a senator back during the time of the communist scare. People in Hollywood lost their jobs all over if someone happened to say, hey, you've got a friend who's associated with the Communist Party. People lost their careers, their jobs. Well, they didn't want to lose this election, so they took a picture of him speaking on some occasion, and another picture where this Errol Broder was listening to a radio with another friend, and they put this picture and this picture together, and they published it in the paper, and they said that's probably what cost him the election because it was a guilt by association. This fella was consorting with communists, so he wasn't to be trusted. Now, I don't know, when I saw this one weeks and weeks ago, I thought, that doesn't look right. But here it was on a Twitter thing, and the lead thing on here, here's what happened to a female Trump supporter when she met peaceful and tolerant liberals. Well, the only problem is, it's Samara Weaving, who's an Australian actress who had gotten decked up for this Ash versus the Evil Dead, and she put it on her Twitter account. Somebody picked that up and started circulating it and put a slogan above it. This is what happened to a Trump supporter. Got beaten up and beaten up badly. People don't stop to think, is this true or isn't it true? They just basically buy into it. And then this one was on in the news where this Israeli soldier was pointing the gun at the throat of this fellow here. And of course, it was played up all over. But Channel 2 News in Israel said, no, this was just a setup. And really, after it was all over, they just took selfies of one another. This did not happen. It was just a pose shot. And sometimes, when you look at picture, you say, how was that person there at just the right time to catch that picture? Well, if they reenacted it, I don't mind if they tell me. But a lot of times, I just watched, well, not going into detail, but a wedding that took place in a big windstorm. And I thought, who was there to catch that picture? Come to find out, it was totally reenacted. Fake news strikes again. Now, this is a political thing in one respect, and that is it illustrates what I'm saying. Trump got trounced when he had the audacity to rename Black History Month to National African American History Month. Racist! Who was he to take the black culture, honorable though it is, and then turn it into a whole new name? I looked at that and thought, boy, they're going after this fella. Some of this is just so insane, just so irrational, you would say, what's in it? It's professional instigators who are in it. You can't explain it any other way. Give the fella a chance. Everybody else has failed so far in the last couple presidential, for one reason or another, perhaps. Let a businessman see if he can put people back to work. Give him a chance, but boy, all the stuff they're doing. But anyway, I took the time to research that. Back in January 31st, 2013, Barack Obama is the one who changed it from Black History Month to the new African American History Month. They didn't say a word when President Obama did it. But if they could choose something to find fault with the current administration, they were going to do that. Now, I hate to quote such an eminent authority as Denzel Washington. Good actor. Most of his films are really pretty good. Deja Vu is one of the best if you like action-adventure. He's been the victim of a lot of press stuff. So he was talking to them on one occasion, and he said, what's the long-term effects of too much education or information? That is, you don't have to even be true anymore. He said, the thing is, put it out first. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. And this is, he's rebuking them, and he said, who cares if it's true or not? Get it out there. We don't care whom it hurts. We don't care whom we destroy. We don't care if it's true. Just say it and sell it. So if you're there first, and that's a problem with newspapers, because they're held to a different standard. And if you say, I quoted somebody who lied, or you can't prove intentional harm, then the most they do, page 13, a one-line retraction. Slap on the wrist. It's nuts in our culture. Back to more of a biblical theme. From the beginning, the Lord said, deception will reign, and Christians need to be careful that they're not sucked into it. He'd already told them way back him, here there'll be a lot of people who will come in making great claims about they're the deliverer, this and that, but he said, don't be deceived. He was deceived. Paul says, the Spirit speaks expressly, that in the latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons. And then when he comes to 2 Thessalonians, keep in mind now that this deception, let's put you and me back here, this deception gets more and more pervasive until we get to the end time, until finally people are ready for the big lie. So there's coming a time when a world ruler will sit in the temple declaring himself to be God. And Paul says there's going to come an apostasy, a falling away first. Satan's going to be working with power, signs, and wonders. Just because something is a miracle, don't think God does it. Satan's got ability to imitate many of those things, but he's going to have unrighteous deception amongst those who perish. They did not receive the love of the truth, they might be saved. So now notice, the onus of responsibility is put back upon those who reject the truth already, and they become gullible for the untruth. For this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. What lie? Because he's already up here and said, I am God, I'm on a pedestal, and I'm going to prove it by all the miracles. The lie in this case is his own claim to be the promised Messiah. They did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Men love darkness rather than light. That's not surprising. That's what human nature is all about. And if it gets a grip on a person's life, they're going to resist our efforts to say to them, you've got a spiritual problem that's going to last eternally if you and I don't work on it together. See, that's what it's all about. We have to understand the enemy and understand that more and more we're saturated in a godless, pagan culture that is controlled by by political correctness and by media that simply reinforces it over. It's not going to get any better. But I'm not pessimistic because I know God's truth is even greater. Let no one deceive you with empty words. He says this didn't happen to you. You once were in the same darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, and as far as unfruitful works of darkness, expose them. Beware that people don't spoil you through philosophy and vain words. And what God is looking for is people to stand in the gap. Now, I don't know where you are in terms of responding to God's call upon your life. He's got a great purpose for you. And it's not just to escape hell. It is to be his representative in a hostile world that will not accept you very easily. But he says, don't be surprised if the world hates you. The reason they hate you is because they hated me first. I want to encourage you that when you have an opportunity to stand before the Lord, don't hesitate. Don't back up and say, now, wait a minute, does this fit into my comfort zone here? Is it going to bring ridicule to me? Is it going to bring a sneer? Is it going to bring somebody running into my boss's office saying, I overheard Andy at lunch talking to somebody else about some kind of spiritual matter? It may cost you. But the cost of not doing it is far too great. And what an opportunity. By the way, we've had it easy, haven't we? And maybe because we've had it easy, our culture is suffering from the church's neglect for the last 50 years. Because the idea is, don't carry on political activity. Hey, I agree with that. But when that says, don't make a statement on a moral issue just because somebody's made the law of the land, that's going too far. That exceeded their authority and intruded into the authority of God, who has set the standards for how people are to live. And you and I have a responsibility to say you will be held accountable for that particular view. I sought for a man among them who would make a wall. He'd stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land that I should not destroy, but I found no one. So there's a big breach in the wall. People, their mental defenses are down. They're just not thinking clearly. They're buying into anything and everything. It makes it difficult sometimes to communicate clearly with them. But you see, you're not doing it by persuasive arguments. You're planting the seed so God's Spirit can take over His part to enlighten and to convict and then to regenerate. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the Word of God. So you and I have the responsibility of making the Word of God available to people and then letting God use it in their life the way He sees fit. That's the important thing to understand. Society, the moral defenses are down. Christians, our faith defenses, unfortunately, are down. We haven't stood for the faith as much as we should, but He wants a Christian soldier to stand in the gap wearing the armor of righteousness so that we can speak for Him. While walking one day, I think of John chapter 4, the woman at the well. The thing that interests me is they're not walking through a grain field that is fully developed. They are walking through a field that has clods there, and they've just finished sowing it in that culture. Because notice, he said, don't you say now, you've got to plant it, there are yet 4 months to the harvest? Well, fine. So they're walking through a field. They knew it had been planted. But then he says, but I say unto you that the fields are already white to the harvest. So now he's taking an illustration as they're walking through a field to simply say the bigger harvest is not here planted in the ground. The bigger harvest is in the life of the people to whom I minister. So the spiritual harvest is one that is really important. And the Lord simply from Jerusalem, I haven't checked this to make sure it's exactly the spacing I think it is, but they could look from where they were up through a good part of the land. So he simply says, start right where you are now. You're to be my witnesses in Jerusalem. And they hung around there until they were driven out by the persecution in Acts chapter 8. And then he said, once that's covered, then expand out into Judea. Once that's covered, expand into Samaria. And then once that's covered, the uttermost parts of the earth. Now, I know he's talking about geographical areas where the people are to go and minister. Thomas went all the way to India. They say Matthew may have even gone as far as Britain. All of them, probably even including John, despite tradition, paid for it with their life. But the gospel just went through the whole world because initially 12 men, The one was replaced, obviously, Judah, but they had 12 apostles who were spreading the gospel, and they did a pretty good job. They turned the world upside down because God's truth has that effect on people. Now, let me finish. I've got 4 minutes. Let's come back to this same thing here. All of us are people of human nature with mental capacities. So whereas the unbeliever has his mind darkened so he doesn't see clearly, the scriptures say that you and I have been enlightened. It's part of the God's Spirit's ministry to give us a clear understanding. In fact, it's a tense in the Greek, you were once for all enlightened. He wants to enlighten us. He wants to throw open a closet door and let the light go in. And you may find things you don't want to find, but it does enable you to clean out the closet during spring cleaning. But you and I have God's Spirit within who will guide and lead and do and teach. He would just do, what is it, about 11 things that I counted for the believer. So we have a different ability. Now, if that's true, and I understand what is at stake, I ought to be so spiritually patriotic, I would just sign up. You don't even have to draft me. So sign up for the warfare. But many Christians are not signing up for the warfare. Okay, why is it? May I suggest to you? There may be a stronghold in your life. Fear. It's the thing that determines what you say, what you do, and how you respond. It may neutralize you completely. You may have lustful thoughts, and that's what you dwell on all the time. It saps your spiritual energy. A believer may have been taught things that are totally wrong. Man, I could enumerate all kinds of them. But the fellow who told William Carey, who went to go to India to evangelize, it wasn't Lord Acton, I've forgotten the fellow's name, but he looked at this young man who had the audacity to want to go to a mission field and being the staunch Calvinist that he was, not picking on them, but that was consistent with his view. Young man, if God wants the heathen in India converted, he will convert them himself. I wish he'd read the Bible, which simply says God converts through the message that is sown by faithful believers. You know, it's just that simple. But then there are other people who buy into some serious, serious error as a believer. Greed, a materialistic culture. If there's anything that's neutralized the church and neutralized individual believers, it's that this has gotten a grip on us. Man, need more money. Need a bigger house. I need another car. And you know, after a while, we're so affluent that when we send missionaries on the field, their ministry is hurt because they live so far above the people to whom they're ministering, people don't even listen to them seriously. And I know I can give you 2 books in back of people who've dealt with that issue. The missionaries mean well, but now they're over there doing clerical activities when that $40,000 could be used for something else. For unforgiveness, this is one. Man alive, somebody did me wrong years ago. I just can't get it out of my thinking. I don't want to even be in the presence with them. You know, what is your stronghold? What is something that is so compelling you to not see clearly the call of God and how you fit into it? And the Lord is simply going to say, hey, when you enlist for my service, I'm going to give you some sealed orders. But you don't open them until certain appointed times. But I need to know where... No, you don't. You just need to know that I'm going to tell you when you get there what you should do. We don't like that. We don't like the uncertainty. What I'm saying is, jump into the battle. It's going to be tough. But these leaders in the book of Judges were like Moses. He would at some point say to the Lord, you've given me a tough group to work with. Can't you give me another group that's a little bit easier? And the Lord would remind Moses, well, the grass is greener, you know. I can give you another group, but you'll come whimpering to me. after 2 weeks from that group as well. Now, it's not going to be easy. But what a privilege as believers in our small part of the world. Don't think he's going to call you for the big stuff. He's going to call you and me to be faithful in the little things. And he will multiply that into the loaves and fishes that he needs to feed the multitude. But it only happens when you and I supply the loaves and the fishes and say, Lord, I don't have a lot, but if you can use it, it's available. And then we stand back and see some great things that God does. And we would have to say, I never could have done that myself. But the sovereign God that I serve can take the littlest thing that I devote to him and use it in a mighty, mighty way in somebody's life. You want to be a part of that? When you stand up, that's not to volunteer. That's just to simply say, let's close in prayer so that we can ask God to do that with us. Father, we thank you for your great grace unto us. We were unworthy when you called us to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And by your Spirit, he opened our hearts and opened our minds. And we responded in faith and accepted his great offer of salvation. When you call upon us to represent you in the small part of the world in which we live, help us to understand that that too will be accomplished only by your mighty power as you work in us and through us to plant the seed of the gospel, which will become the seed that brings forth faith in a harvest in people's lives. Thank you for the privilege. Help us to understand that any sacrifice on our part will be worth it all when eternal things are weighed and measured and we enter into your presence having received well done, good and faithful servant. In Christ's name we do pray. Amen.